I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal. It is Inside Arsenal Extra Time, where I'm joined once again, as always, by James Benge. How you doing, James? Enjoying the, should we call it the post-international break now? Because it is finally done. That's it. Finished.
We made it through. We made it through. The thrills and spills and belly aches of England versus Belgium, which I was at and quite enjoyed.
It was a good game.
Yeah.
I did think I enjoyed it for a rubbish international friendly at the worst point of the season that no one cares about, really, and everyone's watching kind of through their fingers to hoping that no one gets injured. I actually enjoyed that game. I thought it was quite fun.
That this Jude Bellingham lad is quite good at football. I can't wait till we're just talking Euros in the summer, because like I know everyone, especially on Twitter, and I feel like Arsenal fans in particular, they're all hating on Southgate and they're all cross that Declan Rice played 180 minutes, but I remember some bad times watching England, and when you're sort of thinking, oh, do we play Kobbie Mainoo or Trent Alexander-Arnold alongside Rice and Jude Bellingham, I'm sort of like, yeah, that's the sort of problems I can get behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is nice problems to have. And I thought England played well, to be fair. Obviously, a couple of clangers at the back, which I didn't read too much into from an England point of view, because let's face it, none of that defence really is going to be playing come the Euros. But I thought they responded pretty well from that. They kept going. And I thought they thoroughly deserved the goal scored by that man you were talking about, Jude Bellingham. If you're just eagle-eyed there, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see Declan Rice behind Lewis Dunk, who was a very happy skipper. You could very much tell that he enjoyed the fact he wasn't a losing captain in his celebrations. I think he was probably thinking about that as the clock was ticking down. He did play 180 minutes over the international break, which is probably not ideal for Arsenal, but he's a player that can go, can't he? He's got that engine, Declan Rice. So he came through it unscathed, which is a good thing. What did you make of his performance last night?
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I think the other two in the midfield naturally caught the eye a little bit more, but in many ways, I think England's Rice is always going to be the sort of player that you have to watch quite carefully, especially when England are dominating possession and dominating games. You're going to watch quite carefully. And I did. I spent a lot of time watching him because much like you, I was sort of watching him with one eye on his ankles or his muscles or anything just to check everything was all okay. But I thought he played well and, you know, agree it's suboptimal from Arsenal's perspective that he's played 180 minutes. But also having Rice and Bellingham play two full games, I thought gave Southgate and England a really clear sense of who they should be playing alongside those two. So I think you have to sort of say, like, you know, Gareth Southgate is allowed to use the players that are given to him. And I see why he made that decision.
Trossard, what did he? Trossard got just over an hour, didn't he? I think. I didn't look at the clock when he went off, but it was just over an hour.
And it looked absolutely. He looked like fine fitness wise. I don't think. I don't think he's used to playing such a low possession game. So I wouldn't say I was like blown away by Trossard's performance, but he's going to be coming back to a slightly higher standard of teammates. Good though Belgium were.
Yeah. I got to say initially when Lukaku, what a ball that was, by the way, when he sent that ball in, I thought it was Trossard coming in at the back post initially. I didn't think it was Tielemans. I thought it was Trossard. And I think there's no way Tielemans has made that long bursted run from deep to get on the end of that cross. But it was fair play to him. Brilliant goal that Lukaku's ball. Wow, that was seriously good.
He is. I don't understand what Chelsea got wrong with him, other than. You know, maybe the system or whatever. He is still a really good striker. He's maybe a bit past the peak of his sort of physical self. And I know Arsenal fans will remember just how terrifying that guy was when he was running at Nacho Monreal. But, like, he's someone you'd worry about coming up against in the Euros because he might lose a game for Belgium, but he might win a game for them as well. Mm-hmm. And then with De Bruyne as well to come back, you sort of think that they'll probably do what City do and play a sort of De Bruyne, big mobile striker front two. I'm a bit more, they're not great. They're not the team they were a few years ago, but, you know, they've got a good draw. I think, you know, they're one to just keep half an eye on at the Euros, I think.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't rule them out. I think they're probably going to be boosted by not having that weight of expectation on them as well, being the kind of golden generation, which obviously we're well aware of over here when we had that. And you're kind of expected to do something and you can waste that talent. And the fact that now this is kind of the generation after where there's not as much expectation, it might help them. And like you said, when you've got players like De Bruyne and, you know, Lukaku can be such a handful in his day, and Trossard as well, who can do something out of nothing. Tielemans is good. I thought I enjoyed the Onana midfield. I enjoyed the whole midfield battle yesterday with Rice, like I said, Onana, and I thought it was really good, a good part of the game. And I do like Onana, I have to say. I always remember that game, you know, Sean Dyche's first match when he just was so good in that match. And I've always liked him since then. And whenever I watch Everton or last night, I always keep a keen eye on him because I think he's a really interesting footballer, Onana. And I thought I really enjoyed that midfield battle yesterday. He was gutted when that goal went in at the end. Out of all of them, he looked absolutely destroyed. I mean, it would have been a big moment for Belgium, wouldn't it, getting that win? I think it was the first time they'd have won at Wembley. You could see how disappointed he was after putting in such a big effort.
What did you think about Belgium's kit? This is the big question.
I thought it was a bit meh. Which,
I love it.
I know you liked it. I saw your Glastonbury tweet and a very James Benj tweet. I don't know. Bro. It's just, look at the colour. I don't know. It's just a bit
tinted, isn't it?
It's not for me. I actually like the England kit.
It's smart. It looks a bit purple grey purple in person, but I like both the England kits. I
think it is purple though, isn't it?
A sort of grey purple. I don't know if it was the weather as well. It felt a bit washed out, a bit Euro 96 grey purple.
Yeah, I saw someone else comparing it to the grey, and I'm not having that. I don't think it's the grey. I hate
it. It does look much more grey. You imagine now, and we've done this with Arsenal before. I remember being in when Adidas just took over, and they were sort of going through the lengths they go to for these kits. And you think they actually must, when they're doing this, think about how it looks on TV as being far, far more important than how it actually looks in the flesh. Because how many people will see this England kit in the flesh for the year or whatever that they wear it versus on TV? And even looking at that picture there, it just pops in that nice purple. But yeah, wet and in person, it's a bit more underwhelming. Can't believe we've done more kit talk than Man City talk so far. We haven't even mentioned John Stones' injury.
Well,
I didn't set that up.
Just
viewers will think I set that up. I have not seen the slides we're doing here.
No. Well, Matthew here has got in touch and says, "Hi, Charles. If you had to pick one to miss out for City, who would you choose, Walker or Stones? I think Walker being out helps our threat down our left, with Martinelli possibly having more joy over Walker's alternative. but Stones helps City retain the ball. So who would you rather not play versus us? Now, obviously, John Stones limped off after, what was it, about 8 minutes, wasn't it, yesterday?
Yeah.
Very early on, and Walker limped off about half an hour into the Brazil game a few days earlier. I think Walker was the hamstring, wasn't it? And Gareth Southgate said afterwards, abductor for Stones. It might be an abductor problem or something.
Whatever that is, whatever muscle that is. I have no idea.
Which is obviously ahead of Arsenal. I think Akanji didn't play for... Who is Akanji? What nationality is he?
Swiss.
Honestly, I was doing my show this morning. I was trying to remember it off the top of my head and I couldn't remember what country he played for. Is it Germany? Is it Germany? No, it's Switzerland. Of course it is. So he didn't play yesterday against Ireland, didn't he? And the Switzerland manager said it was because of an injury. So probably more precautionary, I'd say. But yeah, Stones and Walker, this is a big one. I'm sure it's going to dominate the sort of headlines in the next couple of days building up to the game at the weekend because they're two really important players for Man City. Who would I rather not play out of the two of them? That's a difficult one. I think I'd probably say Walker, but I think I might be wrong in that. I don't know.
You'd take either, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's a flip of a coin type answer for me. I just think Walker's so, so good, and his recovery pace gets City out of problems so many times. I go back to the Chelsea City game recently that Eddie had when Chelsea could have got in behind a couple more times than they did, and Walker kept getting back and saving them. And I look at how Arsenal might be able to hurt City, and it will be that sudden pace and springing forward and maybe catching them out behind, and Walker would certainly help them navigate that issue. So I'd probably go Walker. What do you think?
Well, it sort of depends to me, is Martinelli going fit, to be fit? And, you know, my understanding is that Arsenal don't necessarily know yet. Certainly this was my understanding on Monday, Tuesday. And obviously there are several days of training to go. There's optimism, but it's not a foregone conclusion that Martinelli's fit. If Martinelli's fit, yeah, it'd be great to have for them to not have to face Kyle Walker. I mean, the thing with Stones is that if there's no Walker, City will have to adapt because they don't have another Kyle Walker in the squad. But when Stones hasn't been fit, which has been most of this season, City have sort of just got another one of the centre-backs to do what he does, and it looks quite bad. So I would be, you know, if I was Mikel Arteta, I'd be pretty pleased if John Stones isn't there because they would get a Kanji if he's fit or whoever else to sort of step into midfield. I mean, the horror scenario for Guardiola is if all three of Walker, Stones and Akanji are short because he always has, you know, high quality but low numbers in defence. So if he was out without all three, that is a City digging into their equivalent of Rob Holding situation.
Well, especially if Ederson's out as well. Although I think the expectation is Ederson will come back in for this one. I think when Walker hasn't played a right back, Akanji tends to fill in there, doesn't he? So, it'll be interesting.
If it wasn't him, you would think it would be Stones. And then if it wasn't either of them, Bernardo?
Rico Lewis?
Rico Lewis?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, I don't know, just the pessimist in me thinks that all will rock up at the Etihad on Sunday and they'll all be fine. They'll all be in the starting 11, but it'd be nice if at least one of them missed out. City aren't on their own when it comes to injury doubts, as you mentioned. Arsenal have got a few as well. So I hope that answers your question, Matthew. It probably doesn't because I don't think either of us really answered it definitively, nope. but it would literally, for me, I think, be a
top. We'll take either.
But if I had to go with one, I would probably say Walker. As I said, Arsenal have got their own injury doubts going into the game. We'll have to wait and see what happens with Bukayo Saka, Gabriel, Martinelli as well. As you said, it's all the classic kind of being assessed. It's going to be a late call on all of them, isn't it? I know there was a lot of talk of this is, especially from rival fans of Arsenal, just having players sent back for the sake of it, missing out on these international games. But, they are legit injuries. I mean, Brazil were training at Colney, for God's sake, and Gabriel's not going to cry off of training for them, and then suddenly, you know, he's literally at the training ground with Arsenal training on another pitch. So that they are
the equivalent of sort of pulling a sickie at work and then like going out that evening and running into.
Well, I'll tell you what, kind of talking about that, and I hope he's not watching now. But we took our kids out of school for the first day of term because we were on holiday, and staying that extra day on holiday saved us about sort of £500 from doing it the week earlier because it's in the holidays. You get absolutely ripped. And We were at Centre Parks in Elverdon Forest, which is a good 2 hours, 2.5 hours away from where we are. And my bloody kid's headmaster was there. Can you believe it? It was just
I suppose at least that way you sort of go, well, you shouldn't be here either.
No, but this was obviously in the build-up to it. So he would have gone home and be ready for the term starting. So he went home, you know, probably on the Saturday or something like that. But we stayed for the Monday and then had to ring up the school on the Monday. So, oh, yeah, both kids are conveniently ill, knowing that the headmaster had seen us away on holiday. It was so blatant. But, yeah, that would have been very similar to what Gabriel would have done. So, I mean, fingers crossed, look, it would be key for Arsenal if all three of those are fit. I think Martinelli out the most, there's definitely the most doubt over Martinelli. I mean, we all saw how it looks bad. The fact that he was on crutches after the Porto game, you know, it doesn't look great, but Arsenal certainly aren't ruling him out yet, as far as I'm aware. So we'll have to wait and see on that. I mean, how important are those three players? I mean, obviously that's a stupid question because they're all so important, but is there anyone, if they had to say do without one of them, of the three, who would it be for City game? You know, who could they just about get... be without? I wouldn't want any of them, to be honest.
I mean, they have obviously beaten Manchester City without Bukayo Saka in the 11, yeah. And Martinelli was, did he not?
He came on the bench. Yeah, neither of them started that game, did they? It was Jesus on the right and Trossard on the left, I think.
I suppose, and we'll dive deeper into this as the pod goes, but you can't help, I mean, Mikel Arteta will not set up his team like this. Mikel Arteta will not allow his players to think like this, but you can't help that coming away from this, turning this game into a bit of a rubbish match that ends 0-0 would be absolutely fine as far as Arsenal are concerned. And so I think therefore having a full strength defence probably matters a bit more. So the one I would absolutely want is Gabriel. I think I would probably I'd play it safe with Martinelli as well, because you know, that is an injury that could, you know, a cut on your foot, if you go and play 90 minutes of football, could well, you know, reopen no matter how well stitched up it is and the like. So I think he would be the one I would apply the most caution to. And also, he will be the one that could be most effective in the weeks ahead against Bayern, whoever they play at right back, especially if it's Joshua Kimmich. You know, his pace would just be so valuable in those games. It just feels like he's the one that would be the biggest gamble. So the one that you're shrewdest to avoid messing with. But do you disagree?
No, I agree. I think Gabriel's really, really important. I just don't think you want to mess with that defence. You know, Gabriel and Saliba with Rice ahead of them. You just want that. Well, Rice and Jorginho ahead of them. You just want that at the Etihad, I think. And I would absolutely want Gabriel there, because if not, then you're moving into the territory of what Kivior coming in at centre-back alongside Saliba, and then hoping that Tomiyasu or Zinchenko, whoever you go with, is fit enough at left-back. And Gabriel's absolutely crucial for me. And like you said, Arsenal have proven they can win without Bukayo Saka, they can win without Gabriel Martinelli. So he would be, yeah, Gabriel's the one I've really, really got my fingers crossed that he does make it. I think it's really important. I mean, that partnership, Saliba and Gabriel, it's just... You know, Arsenal built on that, aren't they? They really, really are. They're so important to the team.
Yeah, if Arsenal, I mean, I know that the goals have sort of burst forth in the last few months, but really, I think if Arsenal were to win a trophy this season, I think fans would sort of remember it as the Gabriel, Saliba, Rice, Raya season, more necessarily than sort of the goals that they scored in February. It's they're the foundation pieces. They're what makes this team really, really great. And
it's just what makes those so difficult to play against. And suddenly, if you lose one of those vital cogs ahead of such an important game, where you know you're going to be under pressure and you can't really afford to do anything wrong at the back, then yeah, I think it'd be a massive blow for Arsenal if Gabriel missed out. They've already shown this season, obviously, that they can beat City. The win at the Emirates was big. They had the win against them at the Community Shield, if you can call it a win. Obviously, it was a penalty shootout win, but you know, they were the ones celebrating at the end, and Manchester City weren't. You know, how big do you think those two games will be in terms of Arsenal's mental state going into the Etihad, where we know they've struggled so much in recent years. I mean, it has to be a boost, doesn't it?
It has to be a boost. But I'm always one that sort of wonders, when you turn up and it's an environment that you associate with, even if with the opponent, you think, well, we know we can beat them, which is what they all say, isn't it? And what they were saying after that game. Rolling into the Etihad, does that play in their minds? I feel like, I've been to the Etihad a lot in the last few years, and although it's not like a particularly special stadium, it's kind of like the Emirates. It's sort of, take everything out of it, it's fairly generic. I think there is just a little bit of an aura there, isn't there? And I think there will be that aura for Arsenal. You can't tell me that some of those players won't be going there and remembering a few months ago, well, nearly a year ago, I guess, traveling so full of maybe hope, certainly not expectancy, but hope, and thinking, well, this could be the moment that we win the title, that we, swing, that we end this way, and it all just being horrible. And that being the experience almost every time they go to the Etihad. It's not even, more often than not, it's not even, well, we gave a great account of ourselves. When Arsenal play City, and when they were losing to City at the Emirates, it was still a good account of this, a sign of progress. And then they would come to City's house and get whooped. Certainly, though, you would much rather have that in your back pocket, knowing you can win an attritional type game. But I worry about the impact that environment will have on these players and City at this time of the year in their home ground. It's the reverse, isn't it? They just become a foot taller. I don't know. Maybe that's the pessimist in me. Am I being too pessimistic?
I think you are. Well, no, I don't know. In a way, no, because, City are City at the end of the day, and they've got this record that the Etihad that they are just incredibly tough to beat or even get anything from. But I do think, Arsenal, when we went to the Etihad last season, I mean, we were sitting next to each other in the press box for that game, weren't we? I don't know about you, but I'd gone there and I'd accepted that Arsenal were going to get beaten. I really didn't think Arsenal were going to win that game. The wheels had already started to come off. You'd had the Southampton game, West Ham, Liverpool. And it just felt the momentum was all with Manchester City. And I just did not expect Arsenal to get anything from that game. It panned out exactly as I was expecting. I've got a very different feeling going into this game at the weekend. The momentum's with Arsenal. They've had an unbelievable start to the year in the league. Would have had a faultless start to the year in the league. They're top of the table. They're the ones who have just sort of come from behind to take the lead at this kind of late-ish stage in the season. So I just think momentum is with them. I think they are going to go there full of belief. And I think that's probably a very different mindset to how they went there last season. Even though I'm sure Mikel had them up for the game last season, I can just, in the back of their mind, they must have thought, this is going to be really difficult. We're not in a great place here. Confidence has shot. Injuries had taken their toll. I don't think they'll approach it. I think they're going to go there this weekend and they will back themselves. I really think they won't have that fear in the back of their minds. I think they'll want to go there and they know what a result will do. I'm not saying they'll get it, but I just think it's going to be different. I'll be very surprised if we see a similar game to what we saw last season. I think it'll be very, very different. I think we'll see a completely different Arsenal.
It's another thing where having Saka, at least Saka and Gabriel, and if you're stood in that tunnel beforehand, we've seen those tunnel picks. There's something very 0-1, 0-2 about those tunnel picks of that team. I feel like they will be able to stand. I'd love to go back. I haven't watched. Why would I watch back Arsenal 1 Man City 4? But I'd love to go back and see what those players look like in the tunnel before the game, and then how they will walk out at the Etihad, especially if they're at full strength and they know, they're looking at their teammates and they're going, yeah, we got this. We know how good we are. It's the other part of injuries that we maybe talk about less, is not how they impact, the specific player that comes in, but how it impacts the players around you that you can't quite, if Saliba is playing with Kivior, he will know that Kivior is a very good footballer, really reliable. I'm sure he won't be thinking he's a future building block of Arsenal, but he knows how good Kivior is, but he doesn't know how to play with Kivior like he knows how to play with Gabriel. And that just gives you that ease, stood in the tunnel thinking, he and I, we know what we can do to Erling Haaland. We've got this. It would help a lot. It would really help Arsenal a lot.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, predicted 11s, well, not predicted 11s, the 11s that we're kind of going for. Now, I've got mine in the red, yours in the yellow. Yours, I've kind of put as a 4-3-3 from the conversation we had slightly, but I think you were saying, you know, Jorginho and Rice can kind of play together. Because I've gone with the 4-2-3-1. I'm going with Jorginho and Rice basically playing as a pair. I think that's what I would go for. I'm not saying this is what Mikel would go for, it's what I'd go for. I'd have more of a two and have Odegaard playing as a standard 10, basically. And then Saka, Martinelli, if he's fit, and Havertz, I'd stick with Havertz as a 9. Obviously, I'm hoping stroke. Presuming that Martinelli is going to be fit. If not, I think I'd go with Trossard, but I'd be very, very tempted to do what you've gone with and have Jesus on the left. I think if Jesus, I'd seen him play a full 90 recently and stuff like that, then I would definitely go with Jesus, I think, for this game. But I'm just not sure if I'd start him yet. Although you think, you know, he's been training. He's been fit for a while and he's been training the whole way during the international break. So I wouldn't be against Jesus playing over there. But I think I'd probably just go with Martinelli. So I've gone 4-2-3-1. You've gone more of the sort of 4-3-3. Why would you go with Jesus over Trossard if Martinelli's fit? And I'm presuming this is, if Martinelli's fit, he goes in your team, yeah?
Yeah, if Martinelli's fully fit, he goes in my team. You know, I don't like normally talking about the sort of narratives and players being up for games, but I don't believe that Gabriel Jesus wouldn't be up for this game. I think he gives you so much work down the wings and through the middle, wherever he's played. And that could be very, very valuable. I'm not saying Trossard doesn't. I just think that Jesus in this game will run himself ragged. And I would really like to see that. Obviously, that midfield three, I mean, the joy of Declan Rice is Arsenal can basically roll out both. We'll basically be playing both these formations, won't they? Without the ball, it will be the sort of 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, where Rice drops in, but he's got such an engine on him that I think he will pick his moments much more than he did against, pick a team, Newcastle, Brentford, whoever else he's played as a left eight. He will be much more circumspect. I don't think he'll be rushing into the box if there's a chance that City could break away. But, you know, he is getting better and better at playing as an eight. And the Jesus Trossard one is the real intriguing one. If Martinelli's, unless he's 100%, I do also think great value to be had in bringing him off the bench.
Yeah,
we've seen him have really good games off the bench. So,
well, he won the game at the Emirates off the bench, didn't
indeed.
He?
So, if he was 100% fit, I probably would start him. But you know, if we see the team sheet and he's on the bench, I would think that's an X factor that Arsenal have now. Obviously, City will have their own, but it's quite rare. Actually, I think Arsenal have match winners on the bench, and it would be very helpful to have one.
It'd be interesting if he goes with that 4-3-3, but he goes with, you know, against Liverpool when he had Rice as a six and he had Jorginho playing alongside Odegaard, just to, I presume, was just for the sort of the better sort of mobility that Rice has got, and in terms of sort of protecting the back four. I wonder if he might do that again if he does go over 4-3-3 and plays Jorginho higher. It worked really well against Liverpool, and it might, you know, it's definitely an option for City.
The the best reader of a game I've seen in an Arsenal shirt since, well, certainly since Mesut Ozil left, but it's a different sort of reading of the game with Jorginho, isn't it?
Like,
Ozil and Cazorla were magnificent at reading defences and where the gaps were going to pop up. Jorginho does that not as well, but like, Jorginho just knows where he's got a sort of centre-back's eye for where the ball's going to land. When you're watching this game on Sunday, folks, if you can, if the angles, just watch Jorginho out of possession and see how often he calls the pass before the pass has been made. Even, I bet it will work against City. It's a joy. And one day I'm just going to do a game where I just watch Jorginho for 90 minutes. He'll probably get injured then.
How do you kind of see the game panning out? I was talking about it earlier on my morning show, and you know, some people saying, "Oh, can Arsenal dictate this game?" I don't see that. I think whatever happens, I can't see Arsenal going and sort of dominating territory and possession like we've seen them this season. I just think it's more of a given that City are going to do what City always do, and they will have more of the ball than Arsenal, and it will be played more in Arsenal's half, and Arsenal will be forced to kind of play more on the counter-attack. Not totally, not for the whole 90 minutes. There will be spells where Arsenal will, you know, will enjoy themselves with the ball, but I just think we're going to have to accept that it's not going to be the same sort of game we're used to seeing this season. Like, I've got a question here actually from Drew. Says, is it wishful thinking to imagine Arsenal hemming in Man City the way we had Newcastle during the first half? I think that's definitely wishful thinking. But do you think there is a chance that Arsenal... Can you see Arsenal going and enjoying plenty of territory and possession in this game?
No, but I don't necessarily see City doing that either. I think this game may well end up being quite stalematey.
So that's completely different to last season's game, wasn't it? When City basically just dominated from start to finish. And, you know, had it not been for Ramsdale, it could have been 7, 8, 9 easily. They were that good, had that many good chances. So it's not going to be like that this season.
No, I don't think so. I don't think... You know, because of the personnel, City didn't respect Arsenal's personnel's ability to play through the press, to play, to, you know, to invite pressure and hit balls over the top, or hit passing triangles through the middle to get out. City didn't fear that. It's really like, you know, I know you're the same, and I know plenty of our viewers won't be. It feels quite cruel to effectively pin this on Rob Holding. But a lot of it does come down to, if you have a player in your back line who you don't trust, and I don't think Arsenal have any players in their back line where that's the case now, even in the squad, that you don't trust to build from the back, then City will feel like they can come at you, they can go for that knockout blow. And I am sure you will still see a really intense start for them. It's how they play. They want to win the game in the first 25, 30 minutes and then pass you to death. Kind of like Arsenal do. Mm-hmm. But I think both teams will be a little more sort of standoffish, reluctant to overcommit to, you know, pushing high up and run the risk of being passed around and there, you know, someone's one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. But I've got to write about this tomorrow, but I really struggle to know, because, I mean, who knows what Guardiola might do. He's so unpredictable. Does he keep that really narrow front three he's been using since De Bruyne came back? It sort of feels like that City looks would be a bit too stretched, and Arsenal could work their way around it, and they could do all those things and still Erling Haaland could just score out of nowhere. But yeah, I don't think this will be like an City-Liverpool that sort of thrilling end-to-end stuff. I think these two teams are too similar, and they will match up quite well. And when teams match up well, it can often make for quite rubbish football for the neutral.
Well, that's kind of what happened at the Emirates, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
The game at the Emirates was very much like that. It was great actually in the ground. I loved it. It was such an absorbing game. But, you know, the neutral on TV didn't really enjoy that game that much, because they did cancel each other out, and chances were very much at a premium, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing to say is that was a much worse version of City. Mm-hmm.
I think it was a much worse version of Arsenal as well.
It's true.
Arsenal were getting going. I mean, we've both already answered this really with our 11s that we've gone for. But Katie here says, "Hi, Charles. Sending a question all the way from South Africa. Who do you think should start as nine against City? Personally, I will go with Kai. He's in great form, got that physical presence that none of our other forwards have. And I've slowly lost faith in Gabby. I'm not saying he isn't a great forward. He's one of the best pressing forwards in the league, but he can frustrate when he's constantly throwing himself to the ground, not making the right decisions when in great shooting positions. Now, we've both gone with Kai Havertz as our nine in our 11s, haven't we? I mean, why are we ignoring Gabriel? I suppose actually you put Jesus in your starting 11. Anyway, yeah, he is. So why are we not considering him as a striker at the moment? Now, he's been back a long time. He's been training with the squad for the whole international break. You know, why are we still going with Kai? I mean, my answer is just I just don't think he deserves to lose his place in the team at the moment. I think team are playing so well with him in that role. Obviously scored for Germany during the international break, playing that role as well. And I just think he does give Arsenal something a little bit different at the moment. And so I just reward him for his good form. So that's the main reason I am. But I certainly haven't lost faith in Gabby. I see KD says they've slowly lost faith in. I haven't. I still think Gabby Jesus has got a huge part to play between now and the end of the season for Arsenal. And that might even come on Sunday. Who knows?
Absolutely. The thing is, we talk a lot. I was talking a lot there about how, you know, Arsenal can pass round the City press. But I think it almost becomes easier to open up those avenues if you also have the big lad up top that you can hit the ball to and you can win second balls. By the way, I mean, I don't know whose graphic it is. I should have seen this beforehand. This brilliant thing floating around on Twitter that shows how good Arsenal are. They're by far and away the best team in the world. Probably the best team in the Premier League, but probably the best team in the world at winning second balls. And in the Community Shield, I remember it in particular, like Havertz was just a headache for those City centre-backs. And he gave Arsenal this option to just hit the big guy. You can't be worse off for having that. I mean, it's kind of one of City's great strengths as well, is that they can work it short or they can just go long and get second balls. So yeah, Havertz suits that really nicely. And like you say, even for the biggest games, you've got to respect the form the players are bringing into these matches. And Havertz's form has been fantastic.
Yeah, when you talk about that as well, City, the joy they got out of Arsenal last season in that game in the Etihad, they just basically went long, didn't they? They were so direct. They were just hitting the ball. Instead of trying to get through Arsenal's press, they just went over it every single time, didn't they? And it was just Haaland win the header, De Bruyne pick up the scraps, and bang, they were away. And they got so much joy out of that. And I think that could be quite a similar way to the way Arsenal.
The two great like aesthetic coaches of the Premier League are basically going to be playing Joe Kinnear versus Graham Taylor 1990s football.
I got a couple here from Cathal and Pat. This is sort of looking at the left back situation. Cathal says, "Hi guys, do you think any chance Tomiyasu comes in on Sunday after Kivior playing a lot of minutes in high intensity games over the break? I feel like we need Tomiyasu up to speed ASAP, as we will need him for Bayern against their world-class wingers." And Pat says, "Hi, Charles. Great video on the City game. Who would you have on the left-hand side with Kivior's 120 minutes? Could Tommy come in as Zinny only played 30 minutes? Personally, if Kivior is okay, I would start with him. What do you think?" Yeah, left-back's another key decision that's facing Mikel. Now, Kivior obviously had 120 minutes last night, went all the way to penalties in their game against Wales. Congratulations to him and to Poland for coming through that, by the way. Also had 90 minutes in the game. I can't remember who they played, Poland, in the sort of qualifier for the playoffs. So yeah, he's had a lot of intense football during the international break. Zinchenko, I thought the fact that in such an important game for Ukraine yesterday, Zinchenko wasn't starting, having played the game before, said a lot about where his fitness might be at the moment. Because normally that's a game you'd want, you know, if you're Ukraine, you're playing Zinchenko if he's fit. And they didn't. So I think that kind of says that there's still concerns over his fitness and fatigue or whatever. I'd be sticking with Kivior. I think he'll be fine fitness-wise, despite the intensity of that match last night in Wales. So I'd be sticking with him. I just don't know if Tomiyasu would be up to speed yet. I mean, he only got 45 minutes in that behind closed doors friendly against QPR. You know, Partey got an hour, and this was obviously pre-planned, but Tommy only got 45 minutes. Which again suggests maybe he's a little bit even behind Partey in terms of getting back up to speed. So, look, I think if I had both of them fully fit right now and, you know, up to speed, I'd be going with Tomiyasu on Sunday. But But no, for me, Tommy, I'm sticking with Kivior. I'm not overly concerned by the 120 minutes he played yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Yesterday's Tuesday, and he's got till Sunday. It's really important that at least one of Tomiyasu and Zinchenko is back soon. And Cathal makes a great point about Bayern and those wingers that can go inside and outside. It'd be great to have Tomiyasu defending one of your flanks there. But, you know, it's 210 minutes over a fortnight. It's not like... It's not a mad amount of football for Kivior to play. And he always strikes me. So he always looks in good nick. And yeah, congratulations to him and congratulations to Wojciech.
Yes, made the big save at the end there. Were you watching that shootout? Did you?
I was watching it in the Welsh commentary on the walk back from Wembley. Got to have it in Welsh.
I was watching it with the Welsh commentary on what's that channel? Something 4,
S4C.
S4C, yeah, I was watching it on that. And I knew Dan James was going to miss that penalty.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, when you see in someone's face when they're waiting for it, you just think you're not going to score this. And I wasn't surprised it was saved. Heartbreak for Wales, but congratulations to Kivior and to Zinchenko, of course, for Ukraine. Great win for them. Right, a few more questions before we head off. Rick here says, "Hi, Charles and James. Great content as always. I wanted to know your thoughts on the whole Saliba situation and will this hamper his confidence going into the run-in, especially the Man City match? Do you think Arteta should come out with a public statement supporting Saliba, responding to Deschamps' statements or comments?" I mean, I don't think he's going to come out with a statement unless he gets asked about it in the presser on Friday. But what did you make of Deschamps' comments over the international? Did you see them about what he was saying about Saliba? I thought it was quite weird. I wasn't sure if it was lost in translation a little bit, but I just thought it was quite odd for an international manager to come out, especially ahead of a game that he was going to be starting in, to talk like that. I just thought they were quite odd comments to make.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's something about Deschamps, and I colleagues of mine that work, you know, that know this better, would probably quite often tell me that Deschamps just doesn't hugely fancy Saliba as a player. But, I mean, certainly the one side of it I'm not worried about is sort of the impact it will have on Saliba. Because
no, I'm not.
You would think if anyone by now is used to every word that's uttered by them or about them being put through a great prism of Arsenal content, it would be William Saliba. And if all this stuff that happened before he got in the Arsenal first team didn't affect him, I can't believe this will in the slightest. Yeah, I mean, you've sometimes just got to accept that, like, you know, what players do for a club and what their country managers need them to do can often be very different. I don't really understand, even with his abundance of riches, why Deschamps isn't like, yeah, Saliba's my first centre back on the team sheet. But, you know, he does have an abundance of riches, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried. Did you see his tackle he made right at the end of the game last night?
It was I only saw a tweet about it. Was it good?
It was very good. It was a classic. You know, Saliba, you know the tackle he did on Mbappe when he was at Marseille and Mbappe went through? And there was one for Crystal Palace at the start of this season. I remember Jordan Ayew, I think, went through and Saliba did that and just really clean tackle. And he did that and it was 3-2 injury time. The guy was going through, would have certainly got his shot away. It was a really, really good piece of defending. I'm sure that will do him a world of good. In fact, if he doesn't go up in Deschamps' estimation after that, I'm not sure he ever will. Right, there's one more here that we're going to finish today's show on. It's sort of moving away from the Man City game, a bit of fun. Now, I haven't even had time. I put this together and I thought, shall I quickly research it before I do it? And I thought, no, I'm just going to, we'll wing it to close the show. So it's from
Dean. The top six or the big six?
Well, this is what I don't know. I think we me and you need to decide what we're going to do now. Is this going to be the kind of big six or the Premier League's top six? I think we'll go with the Premier League's top six.
Yeah.
For now, we'll go with that because I don't want to talk about Man United or
Chelsea, wouldn't it?
Any of those teams hovering around mid-table. So it's from Dean. It says, "Extra time. Hi, Charles. Love the show. My son and I listen every day. Thank you very much. If you could take one player from each of the other top six teams that you think would improve our current first 11, who would those players be? I think it would be a tough one these days." So yeah, we are using that as the Premier League's top six. Man United are in it. They sneaked in. I didn't realize Man United were sixth. Okay, so we're going to go Liverpool, Man City, Villa, Spurs, and United. We're going to take players from those. So we'll go in order. So we start from Liverpool. Who would you take from the Liverpool?
That one's easy. Arsenal team? Easy peasy. Alisson.
I hadn't even thought of that, but it's absolutely spot on. That's exactly who I would take. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking, oh, it's probably Salah.
With Trent Alexander-Arnold is certainly welcome, isn't he? But, you know, I see that contract expiring, but Alisson is the one.
Yeah, I'd 100% agree with that. I'd go with Alisson 100%. So that is relatively. I wouldn't say no to Darwin Núñez, I have to say. I love Darwin Núñez. I think he's such a good player. Manchester City.
You want to go first?
Me. I can't. I mean, it's just got to be Erling Haaland. He's young, not old. He's still going to get better. Arsenal need another striker. you can't look at Manchester City. I know they've got brilliant players all over the pitch, but you just can't look at that and look at what Arsenal need and not choose Erling Haaland, can you?
I completely agree. You are absolutely right. Just because people will be like, but who would you pick if it wasn't Haaland? Because that's too easy. I think it would be very enjoyable to sort of have of course, look, I'm objective in my journalistic work, but when I take my journalist hat off, I think it would be very enjoyable to just enjoy watching Bernardo Silva with a little bit of a rooting interest in favour of his team, because he's been one of my favourite players for the last decade or so.
Yeah, fantastic player. He would certainly fit in well. I wouldn't say no to Phil Foden either. Aston Villa, then. You go first on this one.
Like, there's a lot of players I like. I don't know that there are any I'm like, I have to have him. Mm. A bit torn between Douglas Luiz and Ollie Watkins. I would go for Douglas Luiz because I feel like Ollie Watkins wouldn't be the sort of long-term number nine I'd be after. So I'll take Douglas Luiz.
Okay, I'm not going for either of them. I'm going for Moussa Diaby.
Ooh.
As my right-sided backup stroke competition for Bukayo Saka, which is much needed in the squad. So I'd be going for him. Right, that lot down the road, who I won't name, who would you go for?
Son. No, actually. Yeah, Son, but I would never play him. If I'm doing this from a sort of Arsenal fan perspective, Son, but never use him. No, it's Son, and he'd be your new number nine. He's very good at scoring goals.
He is a very good finisher. I don't really want any of them, to be honest, but I would probably go with Son. I said before that Madison went to Spurs, I wanted Madison at Arsenal. I still think they missed a trick not signing him. I still think he would play well in that left eight position and would be a really valuable member of the squad.
His assist for Bellingham.
It was really, really clever. Really good. Really good. So, no, I'm not going Son. I'm going Madison. I'd have Madison, I think. And then Man United. Is there any player at Man United you want at Arsenal? Mainoo. There you go. I'm going Mainoo.
You know, Kobe... My editor was saying this to me today because he sort of said to me, I want you to write a piece on why actually Kobe Mainoo's not that good. And I was like, no, I'd come away from Wembley, but I love him. I think he's great. And then he sort of said, go and look at his progressive passes. Kobe Mainoo's completed fewer progressive passes in the Premier League this season than Thomas Partey, who has played three games.
He's an 18-year-old kid learning on
the job. Yeah, I think he's a great long-term talent. He would pick Andre Onana.
Oh,
I think a lot of his, you've already signed Edison.
No, you've already signed Alisson, haven't you? You can't be.
Oh, well, we're taking one per.
Yeah.
Club. If I'm taking one per, then I would go Kobe Mainoo. But if I was sort of like picking what, like keep like one as a distinct act from each one, I'd take Andre Onana.
Right. The Inter Milan and Onana. Although he is beginning to show signs of Inter Milan form now at Manchester United. Right, I think that's a good place to end it, mate. Thank you very much for that. I hope you've enjoyed it, everyone, watching or listening. I'll be back tomorrow to do my usual show. You want to get involved in that, do the usual stuff in the comments below with questions, comments, opinions. And we'll continue to build up to that huge, huge game at the Etihad on Sunday. How are you? You going? You're in?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm in. You in?
Am I giving you a lift? Is that...
No, change plan, mate. We're clear there. Change plan. Saved you a job there.
Were you getting a train?
No, I'm going to drive from the Midlands, going to collect some wedding rings on Saturday.
Cool. When's the big day?
April 20th is the big day. We've got the stag do on Good Friday. So unfortunately, I will not be at Mikel. Well, if I am at Mikel Arteta's press conference, the stag do has gone very wrong or very right. This could be a very good weekend for me, or it could be a terrible weekend for me.
Well, I very much hope it's a very good weekend for you, mate. Yeah, enjoy the stag do, and I'll catch up with you at the Etihad on Sunday.
See you then. Bye-bye.
See you later. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.